There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Phone number, text line 343-0106. Yeah, y'all are good at this. Lots of names for what we could call the Wallace Tunnel, but let's get to the major part of this. If we're going to remove every single trace of Confederate history and Civil War history in general, because it tastes bad. A lot of people are suggesting, my question was from last hour, just a serious question, where would you say, okay, if you believe these things need to be removed, then where do you go, okay, no, we're not going to go any further than that. I think that's worthwhile asking that question. Oh, and before we go further, we can talk about this more this hour, but I got to get you the news now. This is, here we go. Now, y'all let this sink in here. Now, once again, I am not, there are people that will say, If science ever gets one thing wrong, then everything else science has done is wrong. That's ignorant. But I think the WHO and other groups should have maybe just cooled their jets a little bit with coming out with telling people, well, this is a thing. You got to mask, unmask, asymptomatic, whether you have, because now, remember, so we were on the, at first it was, we didn't need masks. Then it came out that we did need masks to protect others, right? And like I told you, I'm somebody who doesn't believe in mandating this, like the city of Birmingham. I wonder what they're going to do after this comes out. But I do believe if it helped keep somebody else from getting sick and I was asymptomatic or something, I'd wear the mask in a big store with people. Fine. Doesn't mean I command you to do it. It means I made a personal, individual choice. Okay. Then last week, it came out and said, well, you really don't need to, if you're not sick, you don't need to, WHO said, you don't need to wear the mask. So now we're back to no mask. And then today, according to World Health Organization, the asymptomatic spread of coronavirus is very rare. Now, this was the thing that had people like me really concerned, because the idea that I could pick up COVID-19, be asymptomatic, and then get around one of my loved ones, people that are older, people or in groups that, and that, just the idea that I would give them something that could be that dangerous to them was enough to make me go through a lot of processes, whether it's mask, whether it was social distancing, all these things, because you know if you feel sick, but this fear, right, this asymptomatic, so you don't feel sick, but you still have it and you pass it on. That I think that was a lot of fair-minded people's fear on this, and rightly so, because we didn't want to hurt people other than, you know, carry that to somebody else. Well, today, World Health Organization says if you're asymptomatic, the spread can occur, but it is, quote, very rare. Says coronavirus, a story from CNBC says coronavirus patients without symptoms aren't driving the spread of the virus. Now, of course, will WHO come around and turn this around in 2 weeks? I don't know. But they said, World Health Organization officials said today that casting doubt on concerns by some researchers that the disease could be difficult to contain due to asymptomatic infections. Y'all, this is huge. This is huge. Because then, you know, if you're sick, then stay your butt at home and stay away from other people. If you're not sick, you're not spreading it, except, they said, in very rare circumstances. Said some people, particularly young and otherwise healthy individuals who are infected with the coronavirus, never develop symptoms or only develop mild symptoms. Others might not develop symptoms until days after they're actually infected. Preliminary evidence from the earliest outbreaks indicated the virus could spread from person-to-person contact, even if the carrier didn't have symptoms. How many times do we hear that? A bunch. But WHO officials now say, while asymptomatic spread can occur, okay, it can occur, it is not the main way it's being transmitted, and it is very rare. So what do you say now to cities that have mandated? I don't care about the private businesses. They got the right to mandate. If they want to mandate that you got to wear a mask to come in that store, then so be it. They could mandate you got to wear a Santa Claus hat. I don't care. To come in the store, that's fine. That's their business, and people would choose to purchase things there or not, or shop there or not. But for municipalities that have now put these laws in, these, you know, where it's an ordinance like it is in Birmingham, what about this? So last week, WHO says, well, you don't, if you're not sick, you really don't need the mask. And now, asymptomatic spread, which was the other fear, right? Asymptomatic spread is not the... It's a very, very rare occurrence. I'm sorry, no, very rare. Not two varies, just one very. Very rare. This changes the discussion, doesn't it? All right, come back. We'll take phone calls when we get back at 343-0106. And we've got to get to the story about University of Alabama. SGA is calling for renaming of campus buildings with what they call racist namesakes.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, I tell you what, we're going to call it audible right here because they have started that presser. Talk about reopening the economy and the economic news from Friday that was buried, I think. Pretty good. Very, very positive in what has been a long streak of negative news about the economy. And I guess, are we go on that? Okay, so let's go to the White House press briefing that's underway. You've got Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany speaking and maybe taking questions. Let's go straight to it.
The police movement. The fact that you have sitting congresswomen wanting to defund the police, notably Rashida Tlaib, notably Biden advisor AOC Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a former Clinton and Eric Holder spokesperson Brian Fallon, wanting to defund our police across this country, it is extraordinary. And when you think the left has gone far and they couldn't possibly go farther, because we all remember the defund ICE movement. They want to defund immigration and custom enforcement, and now they want to defund the police. This is extraordinary. This is rolling back the protective layers that protect Americans in their homes and in their places of business. He's appalled by it, and it's remarkable to hear this coming from today's Democrat Party. As for solutions, he's talking through a number of proposals, no announcements on that, but he definitely, as he's noted, recognizes the horrid injustice done to George Floyd and is taking a look at various proposals.
Does the president agree with any of the mayors across the country who are saying, I think we could take some of the money from policing and put it toward other programs that could be effective in community development, which could lead to the potential for a lesser need for policing?
Well, let's be clear. If the mayor of L.A. wants to defund police, take money away from police, Mayor de Blasio, the mayor of New York, wants to take money away from police, that means cutting of police. That means reducing police departments. That means defunding police departments, if not getting rid of them entirely. No, he does not agree with that. And the rest of America does not agree with that.
Caitlin, two questions for you. As you are going over your reforms and what you think is needed, does the president feel that there is systemic racism in law enforcement?
The president's been very clear there are injustices in society. I've noted several for you that he's pointed out as a Republican primary candidate, noting the Sandra Bland video was absolutely horrible, noting George Floyd, there's a civil rights investigation into that. He definitely believes there are instances of racism, but look, he believes our law enforcement are the best in the world. He believes that by and large, they are good people. The 750 who were injured defending this country from rioters and Antifa in the streets, as to be distinguished from the peaceful protesters. Those 750 officers who were hurt defending our country were heroes, as was David Dorn, a police officer who lost his life, and Patrick Underwood, who also lost his life in the last week or so.
But he doesn't think that there is systemic racism at law.
He believes most of our police officers are good, hardworking people, and there's a lot of evidence of that, and he has great faith in our police department.
Okay, well, my second question. Does he still believe that NFL players who kneel as a form of protest against police brutality should be fired?
The president is very much against kneeling in general. The president has made clear for years that kneeling is tied to our national anthem, that it does not respect our military men and women across this country. He's not a fan of the kneeling movement. He's made that very clear, particularly because he thinks it's disrespectful to our military, as the kneeling originated at the kneeling during the national anthem.
Do you think they should be fired?
I have no comments on that. He is against the kneeling movement, though, as he's noted on Twitter as recently as a few days ago.
Can you say yes, he does still think they should be fired?
I have no information on that, and I have not talked to him about that.
Is there anything in the Democrats' Policing Act that the administration supports?
Yeah, that legislation, first of all, the text of it hasn't even been given to us. I've not talked with the president about that yet. He hasn't reviewed it yet. He's looking at a number of proposals, but there are some non-starters in there, I would say, particularly on the immunity issue. You had AG Barr saying this weekend he was asked about reduced immunity, and he said, I don't think we need to reduce immunity to go after the bad cops, because that would result certainly in police pulling back, which is not advisable. So he hasn't reviewed the legislation, but AG Barr, as a member of the administration, noted this prior to the proposal coming out.
Does the administration support the banning of the use of chokeholds?
Look, the president, again, hasn't reviewed this piece of legislation. The president is looking at what's a state issue, what's a federal issue right now. He's currently reviewing proposals, actually, on this very topic about police reform, so I'll leave it to him and not get ahead of him on that. But certainly, we believe that the appropriate amount of force should be used in any police interaction with an individual.
But 2 weeks after all of this civil unrest, why does the White House not have a plan? The president said on Friday that his plan for combating racism is a strong economy. How does that work?
Look, that's an important part of combating racism, is making sure that there's equal opportunity for Black Americans in this country. This president, you know, we hear a lot of words from Democrats about criminal justice reform, that they wanted this. Well, they got it with President Trump reducing racial sentencing disparities via the First Step Act. You know, Democrats talk about economic opportunity for Black Americans and people in vulnerable communities, and this president has done that with opportunity zones. It was a good start, more than 900 places, creating private investment to help people get on their feet to start businesses in this country. HBCUs, record funding. This president has repeatedly, through his actions, stood up for the Black community, and a big piece of that is absolutely economic reform. And I'd finally note on the point of economic reform, the USMCA, these trade deals, the TPP, making sure that didn't take place, that directly advantaged hardworking men and women in Detroit who wanted their auto jobs. So his reformation with trade, and also opportunity zones is helping to ensure that Americans of all races have the same opportunity in the economic playing field.
You're saying he will eventually have a police reform plan.
He's looking at various proposals, so I won't get ahead of him. No announcements on that front, but he has been looking at them over the last few days. Yes.
There are reports that the administration is going to be pulling troops from Germany. Can you say how many and when and where are they going?
Yeah, what I would say on that is, first, we have no announcements at this time. I know there's reporting out there, but as of this moment, there are no announcements. The president's continually reassessing the best posture for the United States military forces and our presence overseas. I mean, we remain committed to working with our strong allies.
Will he consult Angela Merkel before making a final decision?
I'll leave that to the president. Again, no announcements at this time.
Okay. And just one final, the new Lafayette Square fencing, do you have any indication on when that might be removed or taken down, since the protests have become more peaceful? And who makes that decision?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any announcements with regard to the fencing. That's not something that's in White House control in terms of securing the perimeter. But what I would say is the president has recognized that the protests have largely been peaceful. Why have they been peaceful? It's because of the actions taken by this administration. If you'll notice, Minneapolis was in chaos until the National Guard came in, and then it was secure. You had outside here in Lafayette Park, I noted the 750 law enforcement officers that were injured across the country. Well, one fifth of those were in D.C. and the vast majority in Lafayette Park. And once the National Guard came in, D.C. was secure. That Monday decision by the president of encouraging governors to surge the National Guard made the difference. And the president's recognized now that the protests are peaceful. He's recommended a winding down of the National Guard, very peaceful protests over the weekend. So with regard to the security of the building, not a decision for the White House, would refer you to Secret Service and Park Services on that. But the president has recognized the peaceful protesting and is encouraged by that. Yes, Jen.
Kaylee, on Hong Kong, can you say when will the administration revoke Hong Kong's trade status? And also, do you think that that move would be the only thing the administration does? Is there something else planned? And do you think that China will listen? Are you seeing any signs of China relenting on Hong Kong?
Yeah, we haven't seen any updates from China thus far. No announcements with regard to the timing of that, but the president has been very clear that China's replaced its promise of one country, two systems with one country, one system, which is what led the administration to make the announcement that it would begin eliminating policy exemptions that were given to Hong Kong, the special treatment that they once had.
Kaylee?
Yes, Steve.
Is there any, a week after what we saw in Lafayette Park last Monday night, are there any people here in this building who believe that, or does the president believe, that perhaps things went the way they shouldn't have gone? Is there any regret on the part of the president or anyone here about how people were treated, people who were peacefully protesting, and how they were rushed out so violently?
No, there's no regrets on the part of this White House because, look, I'd note that many of those decisions were not made here within the White House. It was AG Barr who made the decision to move the perimeter. Monday night, Park Police also had made that decision independently when they saw all of the violence in Lafayette Square. And when, before these protesters were moved by Park Police and they issued that tactical order, there were three loud warnings. And as I believe it was AG Barr on Face the Nation noted, that some of those protesters moved back and adhered to the warning, but others of those protesters started hurling objects, and that was unacceptable. And Park Police acted as they felt they needed to at that time in response, and we stand by those actions.
The country and the world saw this violent clash between people who were otherwise peacefully protesting, but really the president is not sorry for the way things went?
No, the president is sorry about the fact that Antifa wreaked havoc in our streets and the failure of some members of the media to note that. Like CNN's Chris Cuomo said, show me where it says protesters are supposed to be peaceful. Well, I'd point him to the First Amendment where it says that you have the right to, quote, peaceably assemble. He should go back and read the Constitution. There are many others out there, like Don Lemon, saying that rioting is a mechanism to restructure our country. Burning down St. John's, using a pick to literally, like, carve out, as we saw in that video, concrete from the sidewalk to hurl at officers, that's not peacefully protesting. The actions of the rioters were not in keeping with the First Amendment. And I think the media needs to recognize there's a discernment between the peaceful protesters, many of whom I've seen, and the rioters. And yes, America will act against rioters. And yes, under President Trump, he will not allow burning buildings, 150 federal buildings to be defaced, and 750 law enforcement officers to be injured in our country.
Can I ask you one more?
Yes,
President?
Brian.
Just
I like the blue suit.
Oh, thank you.
That's a really snazzy look.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just to follow up on that, you do know that the burning of St. John's happened on Sunday night, and a lot of the violence that you're talking about, that happened on Sunday night. What he was asking about was Monday, when, as anyone who was down there knows, it was almost exclusively peaceful, especially in the moments before the chemical munitions were used on those protesters. So do you just want to clarify that about the burning of St. John's? Because that happened on a different day.
Yeah, the burning of St. John's is what prompted the decision to move the perimeter. It's what prompted Park Police to say that evening, the perimeter must be moved. It's what prompted, yes, it's what prompted AG Barr to agree with that decision on Monday morning that the perimeter needed to be moved. But when you hurl objects at Park Police, when you don't move after three orders are given, Park Police acted appropriately. When the shield of Park Police was batted down when one person tried to grab a Park Police officer's weapon, that's not peaceful by any definition of the word.
And one question on the area in front of the White House is now officially known as Black Lives Matter Plaza. Does the president agree with that decision?
I have haven't talked to him about it. I haven't mentioned that to him. Yes.
Kelly, does he agree in general the way that Mitt Romney stated over the weekend he does with the core message of Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, Mitt Romney can say three words outside on Pennsylvania Avenue, but I would note this, that President Trump won 8% of the Black vote. Mitt Romney won 2% of the Black vote. I believe President Trump, people across the country recognize that while Mitt Romney has a lot of words, notably he said that 47% of the nation is dependent upon government, believes they are victims, believes that the government has a responsibility to care for them. Those were Mitt Romney's words not too long ago. The president takes great offense to those words. That's not America. Guess what America is? It's when given opportunity via a Trump opportunity zone, belief that Americans of all races can rise to the occasion and achieve, belief in HBCUs and giving funding, record funding to HBCUs, because we need to enable education in our country and school choice. Those kind of actions on the part of the president stand in stark contrast with the very empty words of Senator Romney. Yes.
Thank you, Kaylee. As you have noted, the president has talked about the protest. He's talked about the death of George Floyd. But he still hasn't given a formal address to the nation. Why is that, and are there plans for him to do that anytime soon?
So the president has addressed the nation on this. I know several media outlets chose not to cover it. But when he was down in Florida last Saturday, he said, and I have the whole thing here, as he said many times, the death of George Floyd on the streets of Minneapolis was a grave tragedy. It should never, ever have happened. He spent several minutes going through this. In fact, half of his speech saying, I understand the pain that people are feeling. We support the right of peaceful protesters. We hear their pleas. And he went on and on and on. He said on Monday, I am your president of law and order and an ally of peaceful protesters. So he has said it. Some in the media have chosen not to cover it. Those words are out there and they're documented. Yes. Ebony.
Yeah. Thank you. Obviously, we're hearing a very optimistic message from the president about the jobs numbers and the stock market recovery. But in a executive order on Thursday night, the president said that he had determined that without intervention, the U.S. faced the likelihood of a long economic recovery with persistent high unemployment. I'm just wondering why we're hearing two messages from the president and how the American people are supposed to feel about the economy for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, the president sees Friday as a great stride toward what he ultimately wants, which is this rearing economy that we had where paychecks were growing and at the fastest for low-income workers. We were at a very good place before he chose to stop the economy to save 2.1 million lives potentially. So he took the action that was necessary at the time. He wants to get us back to that place we were at. He's the one who can do it. He's noted there's going to be a time of recovery. He thinks that, you know, Q4 will be good. Next year will be great. Monday was a great, an unexpected note that the market believes in this president, that employers believe in this president, that they believe they can open their doors in the Trump economy. So it was a note of a great first step of progress, but rest assured there are many more steps that we have to take to get back to the hottest economy in modern history, but we will get there under President Trump. Yes.
Sure thing. Thanks. Sticking with the economy, New York City began reopening its economy today after a very long lockdown. Does President Trump think we need another coronavirus stimulus package? And if so, what would he want to see in it before he signs it?
Yeah, he's remained open to a phase four. There was some discussion about this. There was a meeting last week at the White House about that, actually. So won't get ahead of him, but he has said there are several things he wants. Payroll tax holiday was one of them because that directly advantages low-income workers. Several other things that he would like to see in the package. Won't get ahead of him, but he's certainly still open to a phase four. But it can't be, as he's noted, just state and local bailouts for blue states that have run their states into the ground because of decades of Democrat policies.
Chanel. Thank you, Kaylee. Would President Trump support an actual increase in police funding to help offset some of the damage that could be waged on departments that are defunded across the country?
Yeah, so again, that would be getting ahead of the president on that exact proposal, but he's been very clear. He does not support defunding the police in any way, shape, or form. He noted, in fact, just a little bit ago to me, that we have seen violent crime come down in this country. And why, at the time when violent crime's coming down, why would we defund the police, who are in in large part responsible for helping America to get to a place where our streets are safe. So I would point you to that and before getting ahead of the president on a specific policy.
Yeah, can I ask a follow-up to that?
Louise.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about defunding the police movement that's going on. How does it impact the crime scenario here?
You said, sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
Defunding the police, how does it impact the crime scenario here? Crime rates are going up. Do you think that will impact the crime?
Yeah, absolutely. Here? Look, our police officers are the ones who are defending this country and making sure that we have law and order in our streets, and there's no more evidence of that than just taking a look at the raw numbers. Our police are described as the blue line in American society between peace and chaos, between order and anarchy, and that thin blue line has done quite a bit. Just looking at 2018 numbers, murder arrest 11,970, robbery arrest 88,130, aggravated assault 395,800, violent crime arrest 495,900. That's police officers who are doing the arresting. You eliminate police officers, you will have chaos, crime, and anarchy in the streets, and that's something that's unacceptable to the president.
Do you think this is political in nature?
Sorry?
Entire movement is political in nature? Is politically motivated, this movement?
This movement? What the president believes is, look, when you look at, I would just take at their own words, Black Lives Matter DC, and Black Lives Matter DC said Black Lives Matter means defund the police. So if that's what the movement means, of course the president stands against defunding the police. All Black Lives Matter, including the life of David Dorn, who perished in the last week and a half, including Patrick Underwood, who also lost his life this week. All Black Lives Matter, but in terms of the movement Black Lives Matter, they define themselves as defund the police, and that's something this president stands against. Frank.
Yes. Blacks are disproportionately arrested and disproportionately incarcerated in this country. And when they return to society, they are often denied the right to vote, sometimes for the rest of their lives. Is the president concerned about this disparity, and does the president favor restoring the rights of all those who complete their sentences so that they can participate in the 2020 election?
So I haven't spoken to him on that issue specifically, but what I would note is your question does edge on the notion of criminal justice reform. Obviously, someone who's wrongfully incarcerated, that we need to address that situation. And the president has, with the First Step Act, a great piece of legislation that says pregnant women can't be shackled when they're having their baby in jail. These are basic common sense human decency reforms that the president put in place. The sentencing disparities that are at play because of the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 1994, that crime bill, which has been derided and rightfully so by civil rights leaders. This president helped in part to rectify that. And I'd note that the First Step Act, the beneficiaries, more than 90% have been Black Americans. So this is a president who's always stood on the side of justice, but I have not spoken to him about that specifically. Is there anyone who I haven't gotten to? Emily.
Thank you. I'd like to ask a question on behalf of myself and then one from a colleague who couldn't be here.
Sure.
So many complaints were made against Derek Chauvin prior to the death of George Floyd, and I was wondering if President Trump believes that disciplinary records and complaints against police, as well as police personnel files, should be accessible to the public. States have differing laws on this, but should there be a minimum national standard on police transparency with respect to these complaints and records?
Yes, it's a good question, but again, it would get to what the president's going to propose going forward, so I won't address that or get ahead of that. But the particular incidents you reference of George Floyd, it was egregious, and that needs to be looked at and is being looked at, not just at the state level, but at the level of the DOJ as well.
Thank you. And from a colleague, does President Trump urge Prince Andrew to comply with his Department of Justice's request for an interview in the case against Jeffrey Epstein?
I haven't spoken to him about that, so I would not get ahead of him on that, John.
All right, tell you what, now drifted off from the main subject. Kayleigh McEnany still fielding questions. We're going to run to a news break here, check in with Dr. Bill. By the way, still look at the Aldott Cam Causeway closed. It is flooded, as is Bay Bridge Road now on that list. As we continue towards high tide, still another hour away at the mouth of the Mobile River. More from Dr. Bill coming up next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And not only is the causeway closed, even as you're kind of off the causeway, getting towards the Bankhead Tunnel, I'm looking at video right now. Water on the roadways. For example, okay, best way to describe this. If you were coming off of 10 and you got off on the last exit before, you're coming westbound on 10. You got off on the last exit before the tunnel, right? So you could come there, you could go straight across, go to the Bankhead, or you could turn north to go to Bay Bridge Road. There's a lot of ponding of water right there where the ramp comes down onto the causeway and you would turn to go north. It looks like water in the northbound lanes as far as I can see up there. Now, there's some traffic coming down southbound, and they're getting them over the right-hand side, and I guess you'd be okay to go over and go into the Bankhead Tunnel, but you wouldn't be able to continue on to go eastbound on the causeway. So there's flooding there as well. So not only out on the causeway proper, where you can see east and westbound underwater, I'm looking here at the interchange between the exit off of 10, where the Bankhead comes out, Bay Bridge Road comes down, water in the road right there. There is some traffic moving. People are coming out of the Bankhead and going eastbound, and there are some people coming coming westbound, turning into the tunnel from maybe getting the earlier exit or something, but it's not far as you get towards, as you get further east, that it's shut down both ways. So there's another thing. What's the name of that bridge? Does anybody know the name of the bridge across the Tensaw River there? Anybody? Any homeboys, homegirls, y'all know that one? You know, like, okay, if you're heading eastbound on the causeway, you leave Mobile heading eastbound on the causeway, the first bridge you cross, that's Tensaw River, right? The first one there. What is that? Y'all know the name of that bridge? Just could have, anybody here? Anybody got a chance? So, Admiral Sims Bridge. I'll point that out as well. So, I don't know if it's been changed any time, but growing up, that was always the Admiral Sims Bridge. I think there's probably signage on it, isn't there? All right, keep your eyes at these showers keep trending up. This is still left over, like Dr. Bill said. This is still left over from Cristobal and dealing with this rain. He says probably through the wee hours of tonight. But by this weekend, he does have lows in the 60s, so got something to look forward to. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5, and let's see here, get the latest on the roadways in just a second. And Kane will keep us up to date this afternoon during the Paul Feinbaum Show on what's open and closed. Right now, causeway's closed. Bay Bridge Road looks like northbound is closed. So as that changes, I know that'll be a big deal come commute time this afternoon. We'll let you know more about it. Out from Minneapolis, 1.25 million, so 1.25 million in bail set for Derek Chauvin after his initial appearance in court. This from the Star Tribune out of Minneapolis. Says unconditional bail for former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was raised to $1.25 million Monday afternoon. Chauvin made his first court appearance by video feed, handcuffed and in an orange jumpsuit, sitting in a small conference room table. The prosecutor, Matthew Frank, argued the severity of the charges and the strength of public opinion against Chauvin made him more likely a flight risk. Frank asked Circuit Court Judge Janice Redding to raise bail from $1.25 million to $1.25 million from $1 million without conditions and $1 million from $750,000 with conditions. All right. Chauvin and his lawyer, Eric Nelson, did not object in the short hearing, which lasted 15 minutes. Chauvin, 44, of Oakdale. Okay, we go through that part. Let's see. Anything else? It didn't say what conditions. We're trying to look at this. Doesn't say what conditions. His next court appearance for the other officers that were arrested here will be June 29th on there. All right, so that's the It's the latest on what's coming out of Minneapolis today. All right. Aiden's talking about when that bridge used to be a drawbridge. Remember, when they kept the Aiden, remember they kept the drawbridge metal for a while. Remember that? When did they change that? They're on the bridge over the Tensaw. They, for a while, even though it wasn't a drawbridge, they still had, didn't they still, why do I still remember the wall going across there? Matthew says, just left Mobile going to Daphne. Bayway westbound is stop and go. Bayway eastbound is heavy traffic but moving. Some parts of the causeway completely underwater. Kind of cool look. Like it looks like one giant Mobile Bay. Hey, Matthew, don't get me started on something I started talking about 20 years ago. And it was a movement that actually we had meetings and stuff down on the causeway and talked about all that. But I need to remove sections of the causeway, keep the places where people had businesses and private property and those kind of things, but put a lot more bridges in to let the water do what it wants to do, to move freely in and out. But those were days gone by. There is not a move. There's not a move to. Now, there could be somebody saying there's a move to rename the Dolly Parton Bridge. Well, it's W.K. Wilson Bridge, and maybe that, but I don't know. Do not start rumors that there's a movement to rename the Dolly Parton Bridge. And there's no movement for the Admiral Sims Bridge. It's just when I was looking at the Aldott cam and thinking about the traffic down there, it came to mind that would be the Admiral Sims Bridge. All right, this story that has gotten delayed because we had the presser pop up there from AL.com, Alabama SGA calling for renaming of campus buildings with racist namesakes. Ben Flanagan's story here. So the University of Alabama Student Government Association called for the school to rename buildings on its campus with racist namesakes, end quote. The SGA released the statement Sunday afternoon, quote, since the beginning of this administration, President DeMarcus Joyner and Chief of Staff Catherine Hayes have been engaged in a much-needed conversation with officials to begin the work of changing the names of campus buildings with racist namesakes. It goes on to say, the University of Alabama Student Government Association joins our fellow students in their call to rename these buildings and urge a review of the Alabama Memorial Preservation Act, state law banning local governments from renaming historical buildings, end quote. DeMarcus Joyner, who is African-American, ran unopposed for SGA president during the spring semester, winning in March. Several buildings on campus are named after people tied to the Confederacy, including the following three. And now they list as the Amelia Gale Gorgas Library, or as we just call it, students remember, we just called it Gorgas, built in 1939. The first university library known as the Rotunda was destroyed during the Civil War, and its ruins can be found underneath the semicircular plaza in the front of the building, named for the university's postmistress and librarian, Amelia Gale Gorgas, who was the wife of Confederate General Josiah Gorgas, and the university's eighth president and librarian, also the first academic building at UA named for a woman. Okay, that's the first one they're going after. Let's see, Gorgas Hall as well, okay, or the Gorgas House. So the Gorgas House Museum was built in 1829, 2 years before the university opened. It was the first structure on UA's campus, according to school records. It was one of the few campus buildings that survived the Civil War. When first constructed, it was used as a guest house for visiting dignitaries and professors, as well as a dining hall for the students. In the late 1840s, the hall was remodeled as a faculty residence, which during the Civil War belonged to Professor John Wood Pratt. But when the seventh president of the university, Confederate General Josiah Gorgas, resigned because of ill health, causing the Board of Trustees to give the Pratt House, as he retired, it under the title of university librarian. All right, so there you got the two Gorgas ones, and then what else they have? Morgan Hall. Thought of Morgan Hall there, right? It's on campus. Built in 1911, Morgan Hall currently houses the Department of English. It was named for John Tyler Morgan, a U.S. senator from 1876 to 1907, who in 1882 helped obtain indemnity from the federal government for the destruction of the campus in 1865. There have been calls to rename the building, given Morgan, a general in the Confederate States Army during the Civil War, was a strong supporter of racial segregation. Yeah, I had a lot of classes in Morgan. That says a monument honoring Confederate soldiers erected by the Alabama Division of the United Daughters of the Confederacy in May 1914 remains at the center of the quad between Gorgas Library and Denny Chimes on the University of Alabama campus. That's one of the things they're looking at removing. So some things there in Tuscaloosa on the list. Is that going to be going to go around the state as well? I mean, it's should the students be, you know, able to say they rename it? They're challenging, and listen, what they're challenging is the same thing I think is worth challenging with the Monuments Act that was put up just 2 years ago, and 23 years ago, in 2017, because it says it's a Monuments Act, but it's specifically to protect Civil War monuments. And what I think is bad about it, it takes the voice away from individual municipalities. It says the state can tell I guess here in this case, public university at a state level what to do, but also think about this, is that state property or is it property of the city of Tuscaloosa? I would say, I'd argue that Tuscaloosa is kind of different because on campus you have state property, outside of campus you have Tuscaloosa property. But see, in Mobile, the argument is a little different because the property where the Admiral Sims statue was removed from, that is city property. So we get, I still hadn't, Dalton, if I've missed it, I still haven't heard anything from the AG's office on the situation in Mobile. Any more details there? Will we get something from the AG this week to see what kind of response there will be? When we find out, we'll hopefully get him on the show to talk about it. All right, I am out of here. See y'all mañana for Mobile Morning starting at 6. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way. Remember, catch up with us online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, also FMTalk1065.com.